Happy Wednesday, everybody. I have a special Wednesday episode for you. There are just too many amazing books and authors in April that we get three episodes this week. So awesome. Corey Anderson, the author of What Beauty There Is, joins me today to talk about her debut that is incredible. I mean, this book will suck you in and not let you go. So make sure that that book is on your list. It came out yesterday, so it's out now. Go and buy it. Support Corey and What Beauty There Is. She's going to tell us all about her novel, all about her journey to publishing, something you might not know about her, and give us some tips, you know, just for when writing and life can be like a little bit emotionally draining, right? So let's go ahead and get to know Corey. Corey, can we start off by having you tell me about your novel, What Beauty There Is?
Sure, Rose. Thanks so much. What Beauty There is my YA thriller about two teens, Ava and Jack. Both are faced with impossible choices. Stay silent or speak, find the money or run. So Jack has nothing left except his little brother, Maddie, who he'd die for. Informed by the sheriff that CPS is investigating, Jack faces this stark choice: lose his brother to foster care or find the drug money that sent his father to prison. This starts everything, a race against time as Jack tries to find the money while evading Bardem, the man who masterminded the drug deal gone wrong and who has held a vendetta against Jack's family ever since. Then Jack meets Ava, and he thinks he's found someone he can lean on, but it turns out that Ava might be the one person guaranteed to bring Bardem to Jack's door.
It sounds amazing. I cannot wait to get my hand on it. And you, your pitch, like the one-line pitch you did at the beginning, was so good. I can tell, you know, you've got it down. I love it.
Thanks. Yes. It's not something that I have done a lot of, the pitch, so this is good practice for me.
Yes, it is good practice. Well, how exciting to have this book come out into the world, right? Like, I bet you just cannot wait. So tell me a little bit about your journey to this point, to having your book published.
Sure, I'd love to. I think it just started from the time I was a kid. I've always loved books. When I was little, my family often visited the library, and I read all the time. By seventh grade, I was writing my own stories, and they were terrible at first. But I got better with practice.
Yeah.
My first manuscript, which I wrote, I probably finished it over 10 years ago. I queried that, and I got a lot of no's from agents, maybe 100. So it was a kind of a harrowing process, yeah. Getting those rejections. It was discouraging, right?
Yes.
but it did make me ask some really important questions. Who am I writing for? What do I have to really say? And why do I care about it? I remember clearly after I just knew that first book wasn't going to sell, that I needed to do something that dug deeper into me. And that's what led to Ava and Jack. So I had some failure before the success. And I think that's important, that falling down is part of the process of having the success in publishing. I wrote What Beauty There Is for about 8 years. Yes, you heard me right.
Wow.
So, yeah, a long time while working full time. And part of that time, I was a single mom. So I was sitting in the writing wherever I could. And it was really hard to keep hope through those years. I think I don't really know why I kept hope through those years, but I kept going. I don't know why. Sometimes I only added a few lines or paragraphs for months at a time.
Yeah.
I think, I don't know, as a mom, if you identify with that at all.
Oh, for sure. Yes. I mean, you sneak in the writing as you are allowed, right?
Yes, and sometimes it feels like so much time goes by and it can be frustrating. I had so much doubt and I think I nearly gave up, but I decided, yeah, you don't know what's going to happen. You don't know if anyone's ever going to read this, but at least if you keep writing, you'll find out one day. And so I kept going. And finally had a finished manuscript to query.
That is wonderful. I mean, yeah, definitely as a mom, you know, you take the time as you can. And, you know, I think 8 years, you know, probably looking, I mean, that sounds like a really long time to be working on one book, right? Like, but, you know, maybe that's what the story needed and what you needed to be able to make it what it was. But clearly you did good work because here you are and it's coming out. So that's always good. Your work paid off.
Yeah, and I think stories and people have their own timelines.
Yes.
And so when I look back now and I think about that first book that was so important to me and that I wanted so desperately to be, you know, the book that I brought into the world, I can look back now and see that it was not ready. And that it was this textbook and kind of the difficulty of creating it that made me the writer that I am now.
Oh, yeah.
And so I'm grateful for that now.
Definitely. I love that that's your perspective on it, too. That's a good way to look at it.
Well, I might not have had that perspective 10 years ago when you talked to me. But now I'm like, okay, I'm the writer that I am today coming into publishing because of the hard knocks that I had earlier.
Oh.
And it's made me who I am. So the roads are different, but I'm glad for the road that I've taken.
Yes. I mean, I think it's, you know, so interesting looking back on our lives and writing lives and just lives in general, right? The things that happen, and you look at all these kind of weird things or mistakes, as we might call them, you know. But I have a hard time with the like mistakes and regretting things because yeah, there's things in my life I wish I wouldn't have done, or my writing journey, right? But like, I wouldn't be who I am without all of it, and you wouldn't be the writer you know are now without that. Those 8 years spent on this manuscript.
It's true. And I think that having that book that didn't sell and then kind of, I don't know, scraping along with writing What Beauty There Is, it really did give me the chance to dig deeper and take some risks that I might not have otherwise. I just told myself, this is the book that I really want to write. And I knew that it wasn't really a typical story. I knew that it was different and that I may just write it and completely go down in flames.
But you had
but
to try.
Like, yeah, it was like, this is what I got to do.
Yeah.
So sometimes the hard road makes you clarify what you really want, I think.
I think you're right on that for sure. And, you know, so tell me a little bit how querying went for you, and then maybe like your top tips for writers who are in the querying process right now.
Great. I'd love to do that. I remember, though it had been a lot of years, that first experience with querying remained really stark in my mind. There is so much discouragement that comes from getting, you know, rejected.
Yes.
and it is tough. So when I was finally ready with What Beauty There Is, I knew that this time I wanted to give the story the very best shot possible. And so I pored over that manuscript. I pored over that thing until I could not find a single thing more that I could do to improve it. And I think that was really an important lesson for me, to make the manuscript just as good as I possibly could before I sent it out. And that meant a lot of feedback and revision and getting help from other writers with things that I just couldn't see on my own. So even when I'd finished the manuscript, I think I took another good 6 months, maybe 8 months of just editing and looking at ways to make the story better before I actually queried. Then came the query letter, and again, I polished that letter so many times, again, with help from other writers. So I think one tip I feel like would be getting help makes such a big difference. You have to be humble and really listen to other writers who have gone through the journey, and you have to be able to let the process teach you rather than break you. And that's not always easy. Sometimes you have to sit down and have a little cry a little reassessment time, and then you get up again and you don't let it discourage you forever. So I think when I at last felt ready, I sent out probably 25 queries. I don't know what is normal. I really have no idea. But all of those queries were cold, quote, slush pile queries.
Yeah.
Submissions to agents. I did not have contacts in the industry that were going to give me, you know, that were going to open the door for me. And so I was cold querying, and I carefully researched each of those 25 agents. And felt like that I had picked a few that would be a really good fit for the book. And that, I think was really vital to really look at the agents that I felt would work well with the story that I'd written. Within a few days of querying, I had a handful of rejections and several requests. So that was hopeful for me. I sent out about 10 more queries in that next week. And 2 weeks later, I received my first offer.
Wow.
So by the end of that week, I had multiple offers. So once I was ready, it happened really fast. I think I owe that to the preparation beforehand.
Yeah, I think you definitely owe that.
That time around, I had learned some really good lessons.
Yes. I think querying is so hard. And like you said, that first experience you had, you know, was like made you a little shaky on your feet going into it again. And it can be so heartbreaking, right, to get those no's, even though you know it's a business and you know that you want the agent to be just as invested in the story as you are. It's hard because we put ourselves so deeply into all of our stories. And so I think it's so important to do as much research as possible on the front end, and that can cut down on some of the heartbreak, I think, because then you could eliminate people who you know aren't looking for what you're looking for, so then they won't say no, and that'll be one less no that you have to read, right? I'm sure that you know, the way that your querying went the second time has a lot to do with all the effort you put into that research.
It did. I think it had so much to do with the research. I think also it did have to do with being 100% ready with the manuscript.
Yeah.
And I think as far as advice, when I talk to other writers who are querying, especially if they haven't queried before, we have so much anticipation to get to that place in the journey.
Yes.
We want to be ready to query and get that agent. It feels like such a finish line and a prize that we're aiming for. But I do think this is your shot, so don't waste it with sending out queries when you're not quite ready. One thing I hear from agents is that they often see work that has such great potential, but it just isn't quite ready. And so I think that's important to just go over that manuscript until you feel that it's the very best story that you can possibly give to someone. So that's one bit of advice, I think.
Yeah.
And then also, I just think once you begin querying, it's so good to know that rejections are going to come. It's true for every single one of us.
That's crazy. How revolutionary.
I don't know. Maybe there are those few stories of that writer who was snatched up and didn't have any rejection, but those are so far, few and far between. But you can't lose heart. I think that you have to keep going, and sometimes keep going means a lot of different things. It might mean keep up your spirits and continue querying the same manuscript, because sometimes it just takes a few rounds of querying to find the right fit.
Yeah.
But it might also mean, you know, you take a step back and ponder and revise based on the kind of feedback that you're getting.
Definitely. I think you have given some great tips, and you know, I do think you're right. There is this desire to, like, just get querying over with, to just be in that stage and have it be finished. And, you know, it's so exciting and so nerve-wracking. But, yeah, make sure what you're putting out there, your manuscript, is as polished as possible. Not just your query letter, because, yeah, you want your query letter to entice the agent, but it's the manuscript that's going to sell them, right? So you have to make sure it's as, like, the best it absolutely can be.
Yeah, and you just bring up such a good point. I think that query letter is like your way in to garner some interest from the agent. But if the manuscript does not back up that you can really do what that query letter promises, then it's not going to get you where you want to go ultimately.
Yeah.
So the manuscript really is the heart of what you're trying to sell. So, yeah, I think that's really important.
I think so, too.
I also think that ultimately, sometimes it's really hard. It's heartbreaking to know that keep going might mean that you shelf the book that you're querying and you start again.
Yep.
Yeah, and you don't want that last thing to happen. Yeah. I know that I didn't.
But
sometimes it does happen sometimes.
For sure. I think that's like a really mature decision to make too, to look at a book and realize, okay, like, you know, I'm moving on. And what I think it can help in making that decision too, at least how I try to frame my mind, is like, I'm querying something right now, a project that I worked on for a really long time. So while I'm querying that, I'm working on a new project. And when that one's ready, I'm going to stop querying the other one and just query the new project that I have. And that can make it a little less painful as you shelve the other book, right? And start querying something new. But at a certain time, you do have to make that decision.
I think so. And that is such a mature way to look at it, Rose. That's so, so wise, because you have something that, like, has also captured your interest and you can move to it. I had not done that. So, when my hope died, it really died for a while.
Yeah. That makes it really hard.
It does. But, you know, there is just something in writers. They have this drive that they want to see success for their story.
Yes.
And so even with that last option where you decide that a book just needs to be put to bed for a while and you need to start something new, I think that there is hope in that, because maybe that next story is the one. It was for me. So if anyone is out there, you know, struggling with that decision about, you know, maybe you've been querying for quite a while and you've revised and you've gotten right about to the end of the road, it might be that next book is the one that really takes your heart and gives you the chance that you were looking for. And yeah. sometimes I think we stop ourselves by thinking that the one that we've written is the only one.
Yes, but there is another one and another one and another
yeah.
one.
Yeah.
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 We
at least hopefully
right.
it is. Yeah.
I think we as writers though, we always have new ideas and new things captivating us, right?
Mm-hmm. Well, let's see. I think the last thing querying is it's a hard time. And so the last thing that I had as a tip for writers who are in that querying process is to surround yourself with support, because having other writers to, you know, talk to vent or complain or celebrate with, it just can make all the difference. And so finding those other writers to be kind of your ride or die friends, it just helps so much.
Oh, it's like crucial, because you try and talk about some publishing things with, you know, non-writers. Like, my husband doesn't quite understand all the things that go into all of this, right? And so it's like, right. it's not helpful to complain to him or to talk to him about it, because then I end up just having to, like, explain the whole process. Sometimes you just need to go to somebody who knows what you're talking about and be like, oh, this sucks, or, like, this happened, and, you know, have them be excited for you or whatnot. Yeah, those writer friends are crucial in the process.
I so agree. And that does not change, let me tell you, after querying and when you go on submission and then after when you're editing or drafting the next book. It's all the, every road mark, every, you know, place in the road that you get to.
Yeah.
Having someone to talk to who kind of gets it is just, there's nothing that compares. It's so helpful.
Yeah, very helpful. I think that's like the top tip of all the query tips. Find your tribe and stick with them.
Yeah, and we do have so many ways to do that. Even if there's not something local, there are so many things on social media and online that can connect you. And so, you know, writers who might be feeling a little bit lost or alone, I would just say, like, put out your feelers and give it a chance online, because I think I've met some of my very favorite people in the world online. I've never met them face to face.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I'm with you there.
Do you find that true?
I find that super true. I was talking to my husband about it one day, and he's like, those people aren't your friends. You haven't met them. I'm like, they are some of my closest friends in the world,
oh, yeah.
and I've never met them, and that is totally okay. Yeah.
I would go to battle for that person.
Yes, I would. I would do anything for that person, even though I've never met them in person.
Yeah, and so many of us are introverts. I know I'm a super introvert, and so online sometimes can be a little bit of a vulnerable place for me. I just don't feel perfectly comfortable sometimes, but the times that I've given it a chance, it has yielded rewards.
Yeah.
So if you're still looking for those ride or die friends, you know, don't stop. They're out there.
They are. And, you know, there are, like, just get on Twitter or Instagram and, you know, they're, people will be open and super kind to you. If you're like, hey, I need writer friends, you will have so many people that are like, I'll be your friend.
Yes, I'm sure you've probably talked about this again and again on your podcast, but, you know, the hashtag writing community on Twitter is just such a welcoming place. It's kind of like a warm hug when you need some writing, just empathy and support.
Yep.
So...
yes. Go find those people. Find your friends that you will never probably meet in person that, you know, have a big influence on your life.
So true.
Well, Corey, my next question for you, I'd love to know, so far on the publishing journey that you've been on, what has been your favorite part and what has been your least favorite part?
Let's see. Well, my favorite part, I just can't say how gratifying it has been to find readers who love the story. as the book is coming out, there are advanced reader copies coming out, and I have been paralyzed with fear to see what people would think of the book. And so, you know, you wait for this moment when strangers will read your story and see what they think.
Yeah.
And I started to get some reviews coming in, and there are some reviews that have just touched my heart so deeply. For the first time that I found a reader who wasn't like, you know, your mom or your best friend, who read my story and loved it, was with my agent, Lindsay Auld. I remember just back in that querying process, she and I got on the phone, and I got this sense when she talked about my book, when she talked about the story, her passion for what beauty there is and her insight into it. It kind of knocked me over. So my favorite part has been sharing the book with another person and knowing that it moved them and that they cared about it.
Yeah.
That's the greatest gift.
That's the best
gift. It probably sounds a bit silly, but
no.
That's what I'm in it for, ultimately.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like that's the dream of why we write these stories, is to have people connect with them and to be able to hear their reactions. That doesn't sound silly at all to me. It sounds perfectly reasonable.
It is my favorite thing. And so I know that there are also going to be people who don't, the story just doesn't resonate with them and it's just not working for them. But, you know, the best thing ever with publishing has been to find the readers where we just had something where it connected and the story mattered to them. And I think that does lead me to one more piece of querying advice that I forgot to mention.
Yeah.
That was, you know, once you are in that process where you're looking at agents, find that agent who wholeheartedly loves the story.
Yes.
It won't do to settle for anything less.
No, yeah, you want to make sure somebody is going to be like your champion and someone who's going to go to bat for your story, for sure.
And just really care about it. I have found that has been, it's just been the greatest gift to have an agent like that. And, you know, sometimes in this industry, we think that getting the agent is like, oh, I just need an agent. It doesn't matter who it is. And then I'll be, you know, at the next stage. And I would just say from the little bit that I know, that is not true. You owe it to yourself to find the agent that's the right one for you and your book.
Yes.
And your career.
Yeah, for sure.
So I kind of backed this up. Sorry about that.
You're okay.
I wanted to mention it.
No, that's fine. I think that is very important advice. So you told me your favorite part of the publishing journey. What about your least favorite part?
Oh, the least favorite part of publishing is the waiting. I cannot even express how hard that is sometimes. You go on submission and you wait with your heart pounding in your throat while people are making these decisions that will ultimately lead you to a published book or not. And then once that, you know, is finished, you wait for revisions and you wait for past pages. You wait for, you know, that launch and that final publication. It is a long process, but the reward is so worth it.
Oh, definitely. Yeah, and just, this publishing is the slowest thing in the world, right? And I feel like I find a lot of other impatient people in this industry, and I'm like, why do we do this to ourselves?
Yeah, and just for writers who are querying, and it's so just frustrating to wait for responses and to send out more, and you just sometimes feel like that it's just such a drain. But I guess I would say, like, in a way, get used to it, because that does not change that much.
No.
Ultimately, you're kind of you know, it's like move really fast and then stop and wait and move and then you stop and you go on pause again. And that's in this last couple of years, I've just found that that's how it works. And patience is something that you really learn to practice.
Oh boy, yeah, I feel like patience is the one thing I do not have lots of, but I'm learning, I'm figuring it out.
I don't either, but I'm learning along with you, so.
Well, that's good, I'm not alone at least. Right. Well, Corey, my next thing, I'd love to know, when you're drafting, working on a project, do you find yourself as more of a pantser, more of a planner, or do you find yourself somewhere in between?
I am so much a pantser, and I think that it definitely gets me into hot water, but it's the way that I prefer writing. So I don't like the word pantser because it sounds so haphazard, right?
It does, yeah.
it sounds like messy and really terrible. But I like to think of it more as intuitive writing. I start with the characters. And then I let them tell me what happens next.
Yes.
And I let the plot unfold on its own. And that has worked for me. The trouble is sometimes the characters are stubborn and don't tell you what they want to do next until they're good and ready. Or they change their minds along the way. Those things happen when you're pantsing, and probably happen less when you have a good outline and you're really... have spent a lot of time planning in advance. And that can sometimes wreak havoc on deadlines when, you know,
yes,
suddenly you find yourself kind of at a place where you're stuck and you're not sure what happens next. But I would mention that despite being a non-planner, I'm really aware of story arc and progression. Mm. So the story mechanics have to work whichever road you take.
Yeah, definitely.
It's just that for me, I'm often adjusting and I'm planning after I write, and I'm making sure that I hit those turning points that I need to. It's just that I'm often doing it kind of subconsciously along the way, and it's just a different path to getting there.
Yeah. That's what I love about this question, is we all take our different path and have our different process, but, you know, it works for us. And so I love to just hear what other people do. I'm kind of in the middle, but for my second novel that I wrote, I pants that thing so completely, and my characters, I just was like, yes, this is fun, let my characters tell me what to do. And I still love that part of the process, although I do a little bit more planning up front now. But yeah, there were some times where they got me into some sticky situations, and I was like, you guys, we have to go back like 50 pages now that you've made this decision that totally didn't work.
That definitely happened for me as well.
Yeah.
Where the sticky situation happens and you have to go back and figure things out. That's probably, you know, I think it might be part of the pantsing process to have that happen. But I don't know. I think that the planning has to happen at some point. It's just kind of where along the path that happens. Because once I've written, I'm usually going back and looking really carefully at the arc,
yeah,
and making sure, because that structure, it still has to be in place no matter what road you take when you're drafting.
Definitely. You just do that planning like in the revision process, which I think is, for me, I love that. I love to be able to look at the, you know, where the arc is once I have words already on a page. It's hard for me to do it beforehand, and in some way my mind is like, okay, well, you wrote this big outline, now we don't have to write the book, you know? So it works for me better to do it on the back end.
yeah, me too. It just works that way. Hopefully it will for the next book that I'm drafting right now, because I'm on my book two, and I'm about halfway into drafting, and I'm at, you know, like kind of the midpoint, and I'm like, characters, what is going to happen next? Because we're on deadline. So, it might be that I need to, you know, give them a talking to right now.
You might need to do that, yeah. Get them into shape a little bit.
Yeah.
Oh, boy. Well, Corey, the next thing, I'd love for you to share with me something your readers wouldn't necessarily know about you.
Oh, this question is so hard. I think I'm so much less interesting than the characters I write about. So, I don't know. There's really not a lot. One thing that I love to talk about right now is I just got a kitten named Bo.
Oh.
Yeah, he's a British short hair, and he is just the cutest kitten I have ever seen.
Cute.
He's just worked his way into my heart and has become my new writing buddy. So right now I'm posting all of these pictures of him on my Instagram, and I post other writing stuff too, but my Instagram has been taken over by Bo. And all of his hijinks and antics. He's kind of like a toddler right now, getting into trouble nonstop. But he also sits and writes with me and will just, like, be right by my laptop. And so there are kind of fun times of me and Bo on Instagram. I'm at Corey Ander Writes. If anyone wants to see Bo pics.
Yes.
He's pretty cute.
Gotta love cute kitty cats. He sounds like my actual almost toddler, though, who is always getting into everything and is always right by me while I write, trying to click the keys while I'm clicking the keys.
It's true. It's true. He is a lot like that. He jumps on the keyboard when he wants attention.
Yep.
So there are all of these places where random characters will be added in, and I'll have to go and fix them.
Yes, but we love him.
Both. Yeah, he's worth it.
He's worth it. I'm sure he's cute enough, too, that you can't stay mad at him. Well, my next question, on a quote-unquote typical day, which that could mean anything nowadays, right? How much time do you spend writing? You know, do you have, like, a time goal, a word count goal? What does that look like for you?
Oh, this varies so much for me. I think that it has a little bit to do with my pantsing personality. I will have stretches where I don't write anything at all for weeks, and I'll just instead be thinking or reading. And I like to do things that fill the well, especially when my writing starts to feel like it's kind of difficult or it feels off. I will take stretches where I'm filling the well by reading other things that really inspire me, or taking in a movie where I'm, like, so intrigued by the plot, maybe just going on some long nature walks. Those things are a really important part of my writing process.
Definitely.
So I know that sounds a little strange. I don't have a time goal or a word count goal most of the time. I find that when I like listen to what I need, then I can sit down and then find the drive to write, like, on a day where I write for like 10 hours. So I'm kind of an all or nothing person I will have little times of real productivity, periods of real productivity where I'm writing or editing, and just it is just encompassing my whole world. And then I'm resting and kind of taking a break and regrouping. Not structured about it, and that works for me. The important thing, I think, is to find a method that eventually gets the words down.
Yeah, I love that. I mean, I think that kind of goes in, your answer goes in with my next question, which is, you know, that writing can be emotionally draining. It can be stressful depending on, you know, the quick deadline that you have to fulfill. Or sometimes it's just hard, you know, to write when you have like a lot going on in your life. And I love your answer of filling the well. That I talk about that all the time. I like want to scream it from the rooftops to all the writers out there. Like,
oh, it's so important.
So yeah. Important.
Sorry
yeah.
to interrupt.
No, you're fine. I think it is so important to fill your well and to remember that not writing is still writing sometimes. You know, you have to be able to go outside and take a breath or read a book that you love, watch your favorite TV show. You know, I constantly have The Office playing at all times because that fills my well. And something I found, you know, in the last year that helps to, like, because my house is really busy. I have 3 kids and they're always talking or doing something crazy. And I found that painting, I'm not very good at it, but painting, even for just like 15 minutes, a really quick painting really helps to fill my well and like just break myself out of whatever cycle I'm in my brain. So yeah, figuring out what you can do to fill that well to make sure that you, you know, are happy and that you've got, a, you know, good stuff inside of you is super important.
Oh, I couldn't agree more. I'm a strong believer that art inspires art. And yeah. when we're getting a little lost, when we lose our way, which I lose my way quite a bit, I will lose my way and kind of get a little tired of my story and not know exactly what I want to do. And when I take a step back and find some other way to be creative or to take in art, which sometimes, like you said, it's a painting, sometimes it's a movie that I watch.
Yeah.
Many times it's someone else's writing that I'm like, holy hell, that person wrote amazing. I want to do that, and I get inspired again. I think that really makes a difference.
Oh, yeah. I think it truly makes such a difference. And, you know, there's this pressure to write every single day or, you know, write for a certain amount of time. Or, you know, I love to, when I'm drafting, track word count. It's not like a huge word count goal. But for me, just visually, that's helpful for me to kind of see where I'm at. But, you know, it can be hard for you to compare your word count to somebody else's, you know. But just make sure to give yourself grace and make sure you're feeling that well. And remember that not writing is still writing, and you are doing the best you can, for sure.
Yes, I love that. Give yourself grace. That's a beautiful mantra.
Yes.
Thanks for sharing it.
Yes.
Yeah, I totally agree.
I try to remind myself that all the time, and I try and tell it to as many people as possible, because I think we all need a little bit more grace in this world.
Agreed.
Well, I have just one last question for you. I have been told by most of the people who join me on this podcast that it is the hardest question I ask, so I do apologize. I would love to know what your favorite book is right now. This isn't your favorite book of all time, just something you've read recently that you really loved.
Okay. And it really is the hardest question, I agree. It's really tough to narrow it down. I think that I'm really fascinated right now by Sadie, by Courtney Summers.
Mm.
She writes these dark and
yes.
really nuanced stories about girls that are fighting in difficult circumstances. And that really, it really moves me. And so Sadie is probably the one that I am pouring over right now. In fact, when I have a favorite book, one thing I do is I underline and dog ear and highlight pages or phrases that I like and kind of like try to figure out the inner workings of stories that I really love. And I'm doing that with Sadie right now. Like, oh, what makes this really work so well?
Yeah.
And so Sadie is probably the one that I'm most interested in right now for that reason. I also write about girls, you know, facing impossible decisions, and so I felt like that resonates with me. And Courtney has another book coming out in just I think it's days, called The Project.
Oh, I pre-ordered it. I can't wait for it to get here.
you know it. I am so excited.
So excited. One of my favorite books right now is her This Is Not a Test, which I don't know if you've read that one, but it's about a young girl, hard circumstances, and the zombie apocalypse breaks out, and she is stuck in her high school with some other kids, and she's got a lot of serious stuff going on before the zombie apocalypse, and then you had all the zombies, and it's crazy. It is so amazing. I sat down, I picked it up, you know, at like 4 p.m., and I couldn't go to bed until I finished it. Like, it just drew, it sucked me in. Like, she is incredible, for sure.
Oh, man, I'm going to have to put that one on my list because Sadie was really my first discovery of Courtney's writing. And so I am going to have to check out her other books because she just knows how to write a thriller that is,
she does.
So engaging.
Yeah, I can't wait to read the project, too. And I'll, Sadie's been on my list, but yeah, This Is Not a Test was recommended to me by a fellow horror lover. And yeah, it was incredible. So good. Now I want to go read everything she's written.
Me, too. This Is Not a Test. I'm putting it on my list.
Yes, do it. It's so good. So good. It's not, like, super heavy on the zombie or not super heavy on the gore. So if that, you know, bothers you, that... it's still really
good to know.
Yeah,
we'll get back together and I'll tell you, we can talk about This Is Not a Test and Sadie.
Yes,
maybe by then the project as well.
Yes. So. Yes, we can have like a Courtney Summers episode.
Yes.
I love
totally.
It
totally. I would be down for that.
Awesome. Yes, we will mark that in our calendars for sure. Well, Corey, thank you so much for chatting with me today and telling me all about your novel, What Beauty There Is, and letting me and my listeners get to know you a little bit better.
Thanks, Rose. It's been such a pleasure.
Thank you all for listening. Please make sure to rate and review this podcast. Make sure you subscribe so you never miss an episode, and get ready for another episode on Friday.